If you are not able to make out a list the night before, the first thing you do in the morning, before anything, is to plan your day on paper. Make a list of everything that you intend to accomplish that day. Refuse to do anything that you have not first written down on your list, not even a telephone call. The very act of working from a list will increase your productivity by 25% to 50% the very first day. Don't check your email. Discipline yourself not to check your email first thing in the morning. You can double and triple your productivity by breaking the addiction to electronic interruptions, especially email. Instead, resolve to check your email only twice per day, at 11 a.m. and at 3 p.m. Turn off the sound on your computer that alerts you to an incoming email. Do not allow yourself to become a slave to someone else randomly communicating with you on issues that in most cases can wait until later, and even much later. Set priorities on your list. Once you have prepared your list, your outline for the day, you set priorities on your list in three different ways before you begin working. This is another discipline or habit that can dramatically increase your productivity, performance, and output. First, apply the 80-20 rule to your daily tasks and activities. Remember that 80% of your results will come from 20% of the items on your list. If you have 10 things to do in a day, two of those items will be worth more than the other eight put together. What are they? The ABCDE method. Use the ABCDE method to categorize your tasks. Apply the idea of consequences to each activity. In time management, something that is important has serious potential consequences. Something that is unimportant has low or no consequences at all. Think before you act. A is something that you must do. There are serious potential consequences for doing or not doing this task. Put an A next to each of the most important items on your list. B stands for something that you should do. There are mild consequences for doing or not doing this, but it is not as important as your A tasks. C stands for things that are nice to do, but there are no consequences one way or another if you have a coffee break, chat with a coworker, or check your social agenda. D stands for delegate. You should delegate everything that you possibly can, even tasks that you like and enjoy, to free up your time for doing only those few things that you can do best and are most important. And E stands for eliminate. Deliberately stop doing all low-value, no-value tasks and activities. Once you've put a letter next to each task, go through and put A1, A2, A3 next to your most important tasks. Then do the same thing with B1, B2, B3, and so on. The rule is that you never do a B task while you have an A task left undone. Begin immediately to work on your A1 task. Once you have decided this order of priority, everything else on your list is a relative waste of time compared with your A1 task. Practice the 70% rule. If anyone else can do this 70% as well as you, delegate and pass off the task to that person. Because of the comfort zone, we become accustomed to doing things of no or low value that we once did in the past, but which are no longer important to the results we are expected to achieve. Focus on your A tasks one by one until they are complete. The Law of Three. One of the most powerful and productive time management tools is contained in the Law of Three. This law states that there are only three tasks that you do that account for 90% of the value of your contribution to your company and to yourself. Everything else you do falls into the other 10%. With my clients, I ask them to make a list of every task, large and small, that they do in the course of a week or a month. Most people end up with 20 to 30 tasks. Some people come back with a list containing 50 or 60 tasks. Once you have your list of tasks, you ask the three magic questions. Question number one. If I could only do one thing on this list all day long, which one activity would contribute the greatest value to my company and myself? This answer usually jumps out at you from the page. It is usually obvious and clear. And you must know this answer, whatever it is. It is impossible for you to be highly productive unless you are crystal clear about the most valuable thing you could possibly be doing. Make the main thing the main thing. When I conducted a personal strategic planning exercise with the president of a large company, he felt that he was quite clear about the most important thing he could be doing all day long. But as we discussed it further, it turned out that he was completely wrong. It was an important task, to be sure, but it was not his task to do. The most valuable use of his time was something completely different. This revelation changed his career and the direction of the company. In the next 12 months, with everyone practicing this law of three, the company doubled in sales and profitability. Number two, now ask yourself, if I could only do two things on this list all day long, what would be number two? This is not always easy to determine. Often you'll need to sit with your boss, colleagues, and coworkers and get their input. It's not unusual for you to conclude that one task is more important, but to your boss and your coworkers, something else you do is vastly more important. Number three, now ask yourself the third magic question. If I could only do three things on this list all day long, what would be the third most important task? Again, if you're not sure, ask the people around you. For some people, the answers are clear as soon as you ask the question. For others, the answers are unclear. But you must know the answers to these questions. If you don't, you're in danger of wasting your time doing things of lesser value, or maybe even doing things of no value at all. Four corollaries to the law of three. Once you have determined your big three, practice this simple formula to double and triple your productivity and output. Number one, do fewer things. The fact is that you will never get caught up. You will never be able to do all the things that you have to do. The only way that you can get control of your life is by stopping doing things of low value. Number two, do more important things. Work on one or more of your three most important tasks. Number three, do your most important tasks more of the time. Spend your entire day on them if you possibly can. And number four, get better at each of your most important tasks. Continuous learning and personal improvement are essential to your success. But in what areas? Answer: get better at achieving results at those tasks that are most important than anything else. Questions to ask. One of the best of all time management questions is this. What one task, if I were to do it especially well, would make the greatest positive difference to my work? There's always an answer to this question. What can you and only you do that, if done well, will make a real difference? Whatever your answer is to this question, you should be working on that most of the time. This will almost invariably be one of your big three. Review your list of activities for the day and ask this question. If I were to be called out of town for a month and could only do one thing on this list, which one task would I want to be sure to complete? Whatever your answer to that question is, probably what you should start working on first thing in the morning. Overcoming procrastination. Your ability to overcome procrastination and get started on your most important task is one of the most valuable disciplines that you can develop. As it happens, everyone procrastinates. Highly productive people procrastinate just as do lowly productive people. What is the difference? The difference is that highly productive people procrastinate on low-value tasks. They practice creative procrastination. They consciously decide upon those things that they are not going to do until later, if at all. Unproductive people procrastinate on tasks of high value, those few tasks that can make all the difference to their companies and in their careers. Here are some proven ways to eliminate procrastination. 1. Make a list of everything that you have to do each day before you begin. We've already covered this in detail. Number 2. Take your most important task and make a list of all the steps that you could take to complete that particular task. Number 3. Practice the salami slice method. Slice off one piece of a large task and do only that. Often this will get you launched into the project and your procrastination will disappear. 4. Try the Swiss cheese technique. Select one piece of a major task and resolve to complete that one action immediately. Often this will break the dam of procrastination and launch you into the larger task. Number 5, reward yourself. Give yourself a specific reward, such as a cup of coffee or a brief break, for completing one of the tasks on your list. Number 6, work in 10-minute blocks. Instead of worrying about completing the entire task, resolve to work full blast for 10 minutes just to get started. Number 7, Have everything you need at hand when you begin. The act of preparing to work often launches you into the job itself. 8, apply the 80-20 rule to a large task. This rule says that the first 20% of the task often contains 80% of the value of the entire job. Resolve to do the first 20%, and you will often break the back of procrastination on that task. The key to success in your work is task completion. For this, perhaps the single most powerful time management principle is single handling. This means that once you start work on your most important task, you discipline yourself to focus and concentrate 100% on that task until it's complete. Well begun is half done. The habit of starting and completing your most important task first thing each morning will transform your life. Task completion releases endorphins in your brain, nature's happy drug. These endorphins enhance your creativity, improve your personality, motivate you, and give you energy. They make you feel more powerful and productive. When you start and complete an important task, first thing in the morning, you launch yourself into the zone. You actually function on a higher level, getting more done faster at a higher level of quality all day long. Focus on results. Keep asking, what results are expected of me? And of all the results that you could possibly achieve, what are the most important things you need to do quickly and well that can make the greatest difference in your career? Whatever your answer to this question, get started on that one task immediately and keep going until it's complete. The development of this habit will quickly move you into the ranks of the most productive people in your business and your industry. Now, here are three action exercises for you. 1. Think on paper. Write things down. Always work from a list, or even better, a checklist. 2. Determine your big three. Those tasks that represent 90% of the value of your contribution to your company and to yourself. And 3, discipline yourself to start immediately each morning on the most valuable use of your time, and then persist until that task is 100% complete. Chapter 6, Positive Thinking versus Negative Thinking. Henry Ward Beecher once wrote, "Hold yourself responsible for a higher standard than anyone else expects of you. Never excuse yourself. Never pity yourself. Be a hard master to yourself and be lenient to everybody else." Aristotle, perhaps the greatest philosopher of all time, studied the human condition more extensively than any other man in history. He concluded that the ultimate goal of human life and endeavor was happiness. He said that every act a person takes is aimed at achieving a greater state of happiness, however the individual defines it. You want to get a good job? Why? To earn more money. Why? To be able to provide for your family and enjoy a good lifestyle. Why? To achieve personal and financial security. Why? So you can be happy. The true measure. The true measure of how successful you are in life is how happy you are most of the time. If you are wealthy, famous, powerful, but you are not happy, to that degree you have failed in your primary responsibility to yourself as a human being. Every human act is aimed at achieving a greater state of happiness, however the individual defines it. This does not mean that every act leads to happiness. Many people make a complete mess of their lives attempting to achieve happiness and often ending up unhappier and more dissatisfied than they would have been if they had done nothing. They are examples of the law of unintended consequences and the law of perverse consequences. The positive emotions of love, joy, peace, excitement, success, and the feeling that you are fulfilling your complete potential are what everyone aims at almost all the time. What successful people do. Successful people practice positive thinking most of the time. As a result, they are happier, more genial, and more popular, and derive more real pleasure from life than the average person. The opposite of positive thinking is negative thinking. Negative thinkers tend to be hostile and suspicious. They are distrustful of others, and they expect negative things to happen to them most of the time. They have negative personalities and are highly critical of both themselves and the people around them. No matter what happens, they are seldom satisfied for any period of time. Life to them is a series of problems and difficulties over which they feel like they have little control and about which there is nothing they can do. Many years ago, when I began asking the question, why are some people more successful and happy than others, I started studying the contrast and difference between positive emotions and negative emotions. What I found changed my life forever. The Great Discovery. What I discovered was that everyone wants to be happy however he defines it. The main obstacle between each person and the happiness that he or she desires is negative emotions. Negative emotions lie at the root of virtually all problems in human life. If there was some way that you could eliminate negative emotions, you could wipe out most of the problems of mankind. There's a way to do this. Nature abhors a vacuum. If you eliminate negative emotions, your mind automatically fills with positive emotions. When you eliminate negative emotions, you become a fully functioning person. When you eliminate negative emotions, you become capable of fulfilling your full potential. The main job of life, then, is to eliminate negative emotions. One thought at a time. Your mind can only hold one thought at a time, positive or negative. But if you don't deliberately hold a positive thought or emotion, a negative thought or emotion will tend to fill your mind, at least at the beginning. Negative thoughts tend to be easy and automatic, the default setting of the brain for most people. Thinking positively actually requires effort and determination until it becomes a habitual response to life and circumstances. Fortunately, you can become a purely positive thinker through learning and practice. The starting point of eliminating negative emotions is to understand where they come from in the first place. The good news is that no child is born with any fears or negative emotions. All fears and negative emotions must be taught to the growing child in his or her formative years. And because negative emotions are learned, they can be unlearned. Because negative emotions are habitual ways of responding and reacting to people and situations, they can be replaced with constructive habits of responding and reacting. This is very much a matter of choice. Abraham Lincoln said, "Most people are just about as happy as they make up their minds to be." The newborn child. Children are born with two wonderful characteristics, fearlessness and spontaneity. The newborn child is completely fearless. The growing child will touch, try, or taste anything, however dangerous. Parents have to spend the first few years of the child's life preventing the child from killing himself or herself. The child is also born spontaneous. He laughs, cries, pees, poops, and expresses himself or herself without limit or constraint, 24 hours a day. A child has no concern about the reactions and responses of others. He or she simply does not care. Fears of failure and criticism. At a young age, because of mistakes that parents make, children very early begin to develop the two main fears of adult life, the fear of failure and the fear of criticism. When parents, in an attempt to restrain or constrain the child's behavior, tell the child, "No, stop that, don't do that, get away from there," and even worse, physically punish the child for fearlessly exploring his or her world, the child soon develops the belief that he or she is small and incompetent. Soon the child refrains from reaching out and trying new things. He or she starts to say, "I can't, I can't, I can't," when confronted with anything new or different. This feeling of "I can't" soon turns into the fear of failure. As adults, it becomes a preoccupation with loss or poverty. Adults fear the loss of money and time, the loss of security and approval, the loss of the love of someone important, the loss of health, and the possibility of poverty. This generalized fear of failure acts as a brake on the child's potential and then the adult's potential. It is the single greatest obstacle to success in adult life. The fear of criticism. Young children soon lose their natural spontaneity as well. As the result of mistakes that parents make, especially by making their love and affection dependent upon the child's doing what they want him or her to do, the child very early develops fears of criticism and rejection. When parents become angry and threaten to withhold their approval, if the child does not do what they want, He begins thinking to himself, I must do what Mommy and Daddy want, or they won't love me. Because to a child, the love and security of their parents are the paramount concerns in their existence, any threat of loss or retraction of this love terrifies the child and causes the child to engage in or refrain from any behavior that may lead to this loss. Love withheld. Psychologists generally agree that most problems in adult life stem from love withheld in early childhood. The most powerful and profound way to distort the adult personality is rooted in love deprivation, or the giving and then withholding of love when the child is young. Children need love like roses need rain. Without an endless, unbroken flow of unconditional love, the child grows up emotionally vulnerable and soon becomes susceptible to negative emotions of all kinds. Alexander Pope wrote, "Just as the twig is bent, the tree is inclined. A negative childhood leads to a negative adulthood." Deficiency and being needs. The psychologist Abraham Maslow, who studied the personality styles of self-actualizing people, concluded that 98% of adults are largely governed by what he called deficiency needs. Instead of striving to realize their full potentials, they strove throughout their lives to compensate for their perceived deficiencies, especially those of undeservingness and the feeling that I'm not good enough. Maslow said that only 2% of adults experience being needs, which he defined as the desire and confidence to grow and realize their full potentials in life. He called these the self-actualizing people in our society, those characterized by high levels of self-esteem and self-confidence. The Russian metaphysicians. More than 100 years ago, the Russian metaphysicians Peter Uspensky and G.I. Gurdjieff developed a system of teaching to help identify and remove the sources and causes of negative emotions in their students. They concluded, as modern psychologists have, that if negative emotions were eliminated, all that would be left would be a fully mature, fully functioning, completely positive, self-actualizing human being. Reaching this state seems to be the goal of most people in life. What then are the root causes of negative emotions in adult life? There are several. Let us explore them in turn. The roots of negative emotions. 1. Rationalization. Negative emotions are created when we attempt to explain away a situation or behavior in our lives that is unpleasant for us. Rationalization has been defined as putting a favorable interpretation on an otherwise unfavorable act. We attempt to rationalize and explain away the negative behaviors that hold us back from enjoying the success and happiness that we truly desire in life. We rationalize dishonesty by saying, everybody does it. We rationalize obesity by saying that it is determined by my genes or my hormones. We rationalize laziness, lateness, lack of self-discipline, and poor work habits by saying, that's just the way I am. And then, by comparing ourselves favorably with people who are doing even worse than we are, so we never have to improve. As a result of continually rationalizing away our negative behaviors, we become unhappier and more dissatisfied and fail to make progress in our lives. 2, justification. Another major source of negative emotions comes about when we justify our negative behaviors by explaining them away in some fashion. We justify our negative emotions by telling ourselves and anybody else who will listen that we are thoroughly entitled to experience this negative emotion because of something that someone else somewhere has done to us or to someone else. Justification enables us to create elaborate reasons for problems in our lives and in the lives of others. If you could not justify a negative feeling or behavior, it would cease immediately. 3, judgmentalism. Many of our negative emotions come from our tendency to judge other people. We actually set ourselves up as judge, jury, and executioner. We find the other person guilty of doing or not doing something, condemn him for his misbehavior, and pass a sentence upon him. This is why one of the most important teachings in the Bible and in other religious scriptures is, judge not that ye be not judged. When you judge and condemn others for any reason, finding them guilty, you immediately see them, think about them, and feel toward them in a negative way. In the Bible it also says, with what judgment ye judge, ye shall also be judged. This means that when you judge and condemn other people, you actually judge and condemn yourself. Even though you have found him guilty and feel negative toward him, you actually feel negative toward yourself just as much or even more. And in most cases, the other person does not even know that you have gone through this judging and condemning process. The person at whom you are angry doesn't even really care. Hypersensitivity. As a result of the development of feelings of rejection and criticism in childhood, it's quite common for people to become hypersensitive to the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors of others as adults. We see criticisms and slights where they don't exist. We are hypersensitive to what we think other people might be thinking and feeling about us. We are so concerned with not incurring the displeasure or disapproval of others that we are often paralyzed or held back from taking actions that are in our best interests. In sales and in business, we continually meet potential customers who cannot make a buying decision of any kind without consulting and getting the overwhelming approval of one or more people in their families or businesses. Hypersensitivity, in extreme forms, can actually paralyze a person and make him unable to make decisions in his best interests. The cause of negative emotions. Negative emotions ultimately boil down to anger of some kind, either inwardly expressed in that the anger makes you sick, or outwardly expressed in that it makes others feel angry and hostile. Most psychological and psychosomatic problems are caused by suppression of negative emotions, repression of negative emotions, depression caused by negative emotions, projection of our negative emotions onto others, displacement of negative emotions in that we become angry with others when we are really angry with ourselves, and so on. The negative emotions most common in our society are, first of all, fears of all kinds, as we have discussed. They are also the emotions of envy and resentment, the twin emotions that drive much political activity in most societies throughout the world. There is jealousy, coupled with feelings of inferiority, in that the individual thinks that no one could ever love me. There are others such as hate, suspicion, hostility, and distrust. The negative emotion tree. If you can imagine a picture of the negative emotion tree, all of the negative emotions that you can experience can be seen as fruit growing on this tree. In order to eliminate your negative emotions, you have to cut down this tree in some way. Here's the great breakthrough. The trunk of the negative emotion tree is blame. It is impossible to experience a negative emotion without blaming others for something that they have done or not done of which you disapprove. The minute you stop blaming, your negative emotions stop completely. Eliminating blame. And how do you stop blaming? The answer is both simple and revolutionary. It is impossible for you to blame someone else for a negative emotion and accept responsibility for the situation at the same time. The very act of accepting responsibility cancels the negative emotion associated with that situation, person, problem, or difficulty. And how do you activate this sense of responsibility? You simply say the magic words, "I am responsible." This positive present tense affirmation eliminates negative emotions of all kinds instantly. Because your mind can only hold one thought at a time, positive or negative, you can cancel any negative thought at any time by simply repeating to yourself over and over again, "I am responsible. I am responsible. I am responsible." How do you turn out all the Christmas lights on your tree? Simple, you jerk the electric cord out of the socket, and all the lights go out instantly. How do you get rid of all of your negative emotions? The same way. You simply cancel them whenever they arise by immediately saying, "I am responsible." They all stop immediately. Accept 100% responsibility. The key to self-esteem, self-confidence, self-reliance, and self-respect is for you to accept 100% responsibility for everything you are and all that you will become in life. The instant you accept complete responsibility with no excuses, you become calm, clear, and positive. The sun rises in your life, and all the shadows disappear. There's one essential part of eliminating negative emotions, and that is the practice of forgiveness. Everyone has been wronged in life in some way by someone. We have had difficult childhoods, negative experiences growing up, bad relationships, jobs that did not work out, and investments that went bad. Everyone has been lied to, cheated, hurt, taken advantage of, and abused in some way. Unfortunately, this is normal and natural and an inevitable and unavoidable part of the human experience. The only question is, what are you going to do about it? Freely forgive and forget. The answer is that for you to be free, you must free everyone else. For you to be happy, you must forgive everyone who has ever hurt you in any way. You must openly, freely, and completely let go of all negative thoughts you still think, feel, or experience toward anyone in your life. You must issue a blanket pardon for everyone. Now, at this point in my seminars and workshops, because of this reasoning, most people agree that, all things considered, they are going to forgive everyone who has ever wronged them in some way. If you agree with the concept of forgiveness, as most people do, then the next question is, who are those people that I need to forgive? There are three types of people that you need to forgive. First, you must forgive your parents. You must let them go and set them free. You must forgive them for every mistake they ever made in raising you. Many children grow up with an unreasonable belief that their parents, being the most important people in their lives, must be perfect and all-knowing in some way. The fact is that your parents are normal people just like you, who made all kinds of mistakes because of ignorance and inexperience. You must forgive your parents for every mistake that they ever made in bringing you up. You must let them go completely. Even better, you must go to them and tell them that you forgive them for everything they ever did or said that hurt you in any way. Set them free and become free yourself. Number two, you must forgive every other person who has ever hurt you in any way, every personal relationship or business association. You must forgive even those relationships and marriages that caused you incredible emotional turmoil and stress. You must forgive. You must issue a total pardon to all those people you still think about from time to time in terms of negativity, anger, and the desire to punish them or get even in some way. Remember, you are not forgiving for the sake of the other person. Forgiveness is a perfectly selfish act. You are forgiving for yourself. By letting them go free by forgiveness, you are allowing yourself to go free at the same time. Third, and finally, you must forgive yourself. You must forgive yourself for every wicked, senseless, brainless, and stupid thing you ever did that hurt anyone for any reason at any time in your life. Remember, the person you are today is not the person you were when you hurt someone else in some way. The person you are today is not the person who would ever do what you did at a previous time. Let it all go. You must set yourself free by forgiving yourself for every mistake that you have ever made. The truth is that in your heart, you are a thoroughly good person. Any mistake that you have ever made in the past was made because of youth, inexperience, and a lack of knowledge or understanding. But it is now over and gone. Those are past events. Let them go and get on with the rest of your life. As Helen Keller said, when you turn toward the sunshine, shadows fall behind you. Your main job in life, if you want to become a totally positive person, is to let the past go and turn toward the sunshine. Become a totally positive person. Think about the things that you want and need. Think about where you're going and what you can accomplish. Think about the extraordinary person you are and all that you can become. The Trip Clause. I have worked with more than 1 million people on these ideas. Almost all of them agree that they are going to forgive, forget, and let go. However, at the same time, they plant within themselves the seeds of their own destruction. They say something like, I hereby resolve to forgive everyone in my life who has ever hurt me for any reason. I set them free and let them go, except for that one person or that one particular situation. All psychological, emotional, and psychosomatic problems can be traced back to the failure to let go of one negative event about which you are still angry and for which you cannot forgive. The new Mercedes-Benz. Let me give you an example. Imagine that you order a brand new Mercedes-Benz from the factory. It is delivered, perfect in every respect, except for one. Somehow, in the process of manufacturing the car, the engineers have accidentally installed the brake on one of your front wheels incorrectly. As a result, the brake locks, and the wheel fails to turn. You get into your brand new Mercedes-Benz and turn the ignition key. The engine starts, you shift into gear, and you step on the accelerator. What would happen? Well, if one of your front brakes was locked, your beautiful car would simply go around in circles. You could turn the steering wheel and step on the gas, but the car would still go around in a circle, getting you nowhere. The more you stepped on the gas, the faster you would burn out your engine and your rear tires. Release your brakes. It's the same with your life. If you have one single person in your life that you refuse to forgive, someone with whom you are still angry, it's like having a locked brake on one of your front wheels. Your life will spin around and around in circles. You will burn out emotionally and physically. You will never be truly happy, and you will never make any progress. You will think about this negative person or event over and over again, year after year, keeping your mental foot on your emotional brakes. This single insight is the key to understanding psychology and psychosomatic illness. It is the refusal to let go of a single event, and often several events, that locks a person in place and keeps him or her trapped in the past. With this refusal to forgive, no progress is possible. What is the one person or event that you cannot or will not let go of? Whatever it is, you must have the character and the courage to let it go. No matter how painful it was, you must say the magic words, "I forgive him or her for everything. I let him or her go. It is over." Responsibility, control, and positive emotions. There's a direct relationship between the amount of responsibility that you accept and the amount of control that you feel in your life. Because almost all stress and negative emotions come from feeling out of control in some way, as soon as you accept responsibility, you assert control over yourself and everything that happens to you. There's a direct relationship between the acceptance of responsibility, a feeling of control, and positive mental emotions. The more you accept responsibility and feel in control of your life, the more positive you feel about yourself and your world. Finally, there's a direct relationship between positive emotions and happiness, and the choice is completely up to you. Take control. When you blame anyone else for anything, you give up control of your emotions. You turn control of your emotions over to the person you are blaming, whether he knows it or not. By blaming someone else for something, you enable that person to manipulate and control your emotions at long distance. You give him power and control over your own happiness by your refusal to forgive him and to let him go. In most cases, he doesn't even know how much control he has over your happiness and well-being. By complaining and criticizing others, you set yourself up as a victim. By blaming others, you make yourself feel small and weak, angry and inferior. Instead of seeing yourself as a totally self-responsible, self-reliant individual, you allow yourself to be controlled by others and not in charge of your own life and emotions. When you blame other people, you become negative, angry, suspicious, hostile, and weak. Is this what you had in mind? Say the magic words. The good news is that at any time you can say the magic words, "I am responsible," and put yourself immediately back into the driver's seat of your own emotional life. Whenever you experience a negative thought of any kind, immediately cancel it with the words, "I am responsible." Do this over and over again until it becomes automatic and easy. Acceptance of responsibility is the mark of the leader, the achiever, and the self-actualizing man or woman. Resolve today to become a totally responsible, completely mature, fully functioning adult. Just say the words, "I am responsible," over and over again, and mean it. This is the real key to positive thinking. Now, here are three action exercises for you. 1. Resolve today to become a completely positive person. Look for the good in every person and situation. You will always find it. 2. Decide today to eliminate the negative emotions that interfere with your happiness. Refuse to think or talk about the things that make you angry or upset. 3. Issue a blanket pardon to everyone who has ever hurt you in any way. Practice forgiveness on a go-forward basis. Chapter 7. Flexible Thinking versus Rigid Thinking. The individual who wants to reach the top in business must appreciate the might and force of habit. He must be quick to break those habits that can break him, and hasten to adopt those practices that will become the habits that help him to achieve the success he desires. John Paul Getty. In times of turbulence and rapid change, your ability to think flexibly, to consider every aspect of a situation, and then to respond effectively to change can have an enormous impact on your business and your career. In 1952, Albert Einstein was teaching at Princeton University. One day he was walking back to his office with his teaching assistant, who was carrying the copies of an examination that Einstein had just given to an advanced class of physics students. The teaching assistant, a bit hesitantly, asked Dr. Einstein, "Excuse me for asking, but isn't this the same exam that you gave to this same class of physics students last year?" Dr. Einstein replied, "Yes, it is the same exam." The teaching assistant then asked, even more hesitantly than before, "But how could you give the same exam to the same students 2 years in a row?" Einstein answered simply, "Because the answers have changed." At that time in the world of physics, new advances, theories, and discoveries were being made continually all over the world. The answers that had been correct 1 year were no longer correct the following year because of new ideas and breakthroughs in the field. The answers had changed. Your answers have changed. Your situation is the same. In many areas of your life, your answers have changed. What was true and valid a year ago is either partially or totally obsolete today. Your cherished ideas from a year ago, or 2 years ago, or even a month ago, are no longer valid or relevant in the turbulent markets of today. In technology, for example, they say that a product is already obsolete when it first hits the shelves. By the time it comes to the market, it's already being replaced either by the company that developed it or by its competitors. The shelf life of technology is shorter and shorter. It's the same with information and competition. The speed at which they are changing is almost breathtaking. The most important quality. In 1995, the Manager Institute of New York conducted a study to determine the most important quality or qualities that would be necessary for business success in the 21st century. It finally concluded that the most important quality required for success would be flexibility. It would be the ability to rapidly react and respond to the accelerating rate of change in all areas. The development of this attitude of flexibility, accepting that the answers have changed, would give an individual or organization a tremendous advantage over more rigid and inflexible competitors. Change is faster and faster. We are living in the fastest changing, most disruptive, and most turbulent period in all of human history, except for tomorrow and next week and next year. Right up to the middle of the 20th century, it was quite common for a person to come out of school, join a company, start a job, and stay there for life. Today, as many as 40% of adults are what are called contingency workers, freelancers, who go from job to job throughout their working lives as independent contractors. Many of them will never work for a company, except temporarily. 2 million jobs disappear. Every year in America alone, on average, 2 million jobs disappear. The products and services that companies were offering fell out of favor with changing customer tastes, and the skills necessary to produce those products and services were no longer required. This is a major problem in the world of work today, and it's only going to accelerate in the months and years ahead. Fortunately, on average in America, 2.2 million or more jobs are created each year. Fully 80% of new job creation comes from new companies, offering new products and services to different customers in different markets. Because of this rapid rate of change, many industries and most companies are operating today on the basis of business models that no longer work, or that don't work as they used to, in creating a steady stream of sales and profitability. Your business model. A business model is defined as the complete system from beginning to end by which a company produces and sells a product or service and generates profits. There are at least 55 different business models that a company can use. Trying to achieve results with the wrong business model for your current market can lead to declining sales and profitability and even corporate collapse. In 2007, when Apple released the iPhone, the senior executives at BlackBerry dismissed it as a toy and assumed that it would only appeal to young people who wanted to communicate with their friends. Within 5 years, its market share among business owners of cell phones dropped from 49% to 0.4%, and the company has largely gone out of business. Rapid obsolescence. With the release of the iPad and the ability of readers to download ebooks quickly and inexpensively, the entire book market changed. Within a year, Borders Books, one of the largest book retailers in the world, had gone bankrupt and shut down its 600 stores. This is happening to companies in almost every industry. Because they failed to adapt their business model to the new market situation driven by the onslaught of information, technology, and competition, long-established companies quickly disappeared into the pages of business history. Your personal business model, the way you have organized your life and career, may be partially or completely obsolete as well. And if it's not obsolete today, it will definitely be at some time in the future. Businesses get into trouble when customer tastes and demands change. Individuals have problems in their careers when employer requirements in terms of specialized talents, skills, and abilities change as well. To survive and thrive today, you must be on the cutting edge, as an individual or an organization, of the changes taking place around you. The 80-20 rule and income. Many skills that people have are obsolete today, being replaced by people with better and more appropriate skills that are in higher demand. Gary Becker, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, reported in the Wall Street Journal on a study they had done on income growth. What Becker found in research at the University of Chicago was that the average income of people in the bottom 80% increased at about 3% per year, just equal to or slightly ahead of the rate of inflation. However, the incomes of people in the top 20% were increasing at an average of 11% per year, enabling them to double their income every 6 or 7 years and move into the upper middle class or even the wealthy classes over the course of their working lifetimes. What was the major difference between the 20% and the 80%? It was the commitment to continuous learning and upgrading of skills. People in the top 20% bought all the books, attended all the courses, listened to all of the audio programs, and continually sought ways to do their jobs better, cheaper, and faster. Unplanned skill obsolescence. People in the bottom 80% were exactly the opposite. They seldom read a book, took a course, or made any effort to upgrade their skills. They spent their spare time in activities that were tension-relieving rather than goal-achieving. As a result, they fell further and further behind, usually unknowingly. When they finally lost their jobs, they found that their skill sets, largely based on experience, were of minimal value to current employers. And because continuous learning and new skill development were not part of their worldview, they simply went home and watched television. As a result, they often found themselves unemployed for months and even years. Many people today, at all income levels and in all career categories, are unaware of this pressing need to continually upgrade their skills. But as Pat Riley, the basketball coach, said, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. The race is on. No one stays in the same place for very long. If you are not continually upgrading your knowledge and skills, you are not staying even. You're actually falling further and further behind, while people who are aggressive about continuous learning are moving further and faster ahead. Most people today are stuck in a rut, and the only difference between a rut and a grave is the depth. As speaker Jim Rohn said, if you're stuck in a rut, I hope a wagon wheel comes along to motivate you out of it. The three enemies. There are three enemies of change and flexibility that must be countered head on. The first and worst is the comfort zone. People start doing or working at something and quickly become comfortable. They then resist any change, even positive change, that requires them to do something new or different. Instead of learning, growing, and expanding their envelope of possibilities, they dig in their heels, justify and rationalize their resistance to change, and often sabotage the change efforts of others. In Warren Bennis's book, Leaders, he describes how the top people in his study resisted the pull of the comfort zone by setting bigger and bigger goals for themselves and their organizations, goals that would be impossible to achieve without major changes and improvements. In Peter Diamandis' 2015 book, Bold, he urges mold breakers and earth shakers to set goals to achieve 10 times or 100 times their current level of sales, income, and profitability in the years ahead. This size of goal, which seems overwhelming at first, soon leads to expanding